Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this evening. I hope you all are staying safe out there in this rainy weather, at least those who are listening to us in the Maryland area, and also in New York, where the nor'easter is coming back in, and our friends in Rockaway and other places, we wish them well. There's actually, we're going to be talking about that in the next few days again. A dear friend of ours from Rockaway, who lives here in Baltimore, a law professor, is going to is actually raising money and setting stuff up to Rockaway. And we will talk to him and talk to folks from there as well to give you more of an update of that disaster taking place in Far Rockaway, in Rockaway, New York. We're going to focus on the elections now. And we, as we get there, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information about the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, the number is 1-800-492-5538. Joining me in studio is Marta Mossberg. She is a senior fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute and a fellow at the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity, a columnist with the Baltimore Sun, Frederick News Post. Seth Wessler joins us by phone. Seth is investigative reporter for CallLines.com. Of course, they're the ones who are bringing that conference on race we'll talk about more to Baltimore, and has been following ballot measures and more across the country. And Marta and Seth, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot. Happy to be here.
And folks, join us here, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts and ideas. We're looking forward to your reflections on this election and what they say. Let me just start, since we're going to cover lots of ground here, from the ballot measures here in Maryland and across the country to just what the election said in general, because it said a lot. And I wonder, well, let's just start. If one of the things we did last night at realnews.com in one of our conversations was to talk about the referendums around the country and look at them. And say if they are in some ways really interesting bellwether about where the country is going and where the differences lie in America. And Seth, let me just start with you, because you really kind of focused on that in the article in Color Lines, and especially interesting around the issues of marriage equality and immigration. There's some very different stories around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look down at the state level, what you see in some ways is a real set of victories for progressive fights in the states on core issues for communities of color, for immigrant communities, for women, and for others. So, you know, obviously, you all know in Maryland, voters supported the DREAM Act there, extending in-state tuition to undocumented young folks who want to go to college there. You know, Maryland voters also supported, got behind a marriage equality bill and were joined by voters in four other states. In a similar way, and in some places, voters really voted quite strongly to support collective bargaining rights for teachers and other workers. And so on many counts, when it comes to these state ballot initiatives, we're looking at a field of a really strong progressive vote in the states on the issues, on the core issues that matter to, you know, millions of Americans.
Go ahead, Marta, go ahead.
I was just wondering, where were collective bargaining rights strengthened? Because I know in Michigan that initiative was struck down.
Sure. So there were efforts actually in a number of states to rescind the rights of mainly teachers to collectively bargain. So and those efforts were pushed back. So in South Dakota, there was an initiative that would have taken away teachers' collective bargaining rights. In Idaho, a similar initiative was rejected by voters, which would have taken away collective bargaining rights and gotten rid of teacher tenure. So yes, I think you're absolutely right. There were also instances in where voters didn't, for example, get behind initiatives that unions were pushing really hard. I think the main one that you're pointing to is the initiative in Michigan, where unions were pushing, in some ways for their life in Michigan, to enshrine collective bargaining rights into the state's constitution, and Michigan voters did not did not support that measure.
So overall, I wonder what you think. That I want to get into the heart of this election, though, beyond the ballot measures. I think it was interesting to watch what happened in Maryland here with marriage equality, 52-48, which was a about what people who thought it might go if it was going to pass.
I think that was just about the same percentage as it passed in the state legislature as well, which is kind of interesting. I mean, given the fact that, you know, people, it was put to the ballot thinking that there would be a much different percentage on either side, so...
I want to. Part of that may have to reflect in some ways the where who's voting for what in America. I mean, that I've heard a dozen times or more from many people that if you talk to people's children and they ask a question about marriage equality, most children will go, young people, not just children, mm-hmm. people in their teens and 20s will go, what is the issue? Why is this even an issue?
No, I think you're right. It's a totally a generational thing for the most part. But it, I mean, it is. It's a moral question for a lot of people still. But it's. But I think that the older you get, the more likely it's to be a moral thing, and the younger you get, it's a moral thing. But also, from the perspective, it's more just a live and let live. But also an equality issue that is not seen at with older folks in many cases.
And when you look at the well, go ahead, Seth. You about to say something?
Well, no. I mean, I think you know you're making the point that if we look at the states, we sort of get to see. What issues matter to people most? I've been looking down sort of deeply into the voter initiatives around the country. Obviously the presidential race matters tremendously, and the shape of the Senate and Congress matter tremendously. But you know, in California, for example, voters passed what was called Proposition 30, which as a result, really. It rescinds a $250 a semester tuition increase for public education in the state of California. I mean, you know, I think we're looking at people coming out and fundamentally kind of voting for their rights, for the right to extend marriage equality, the right to go to school for a reasonable amount of money if you've lived there in that state, and in the case of Maryland, regardless of your immigration status. Those are the things that people are coming out and voting for.
Well, what I thought was interesting in Maryland, though, is that many of these issues were put on the ballot by Republicans, basically. So this was not some forceful will of the people from the progressive side pushing this to the ballot. This was saying, you know, a Republican saying, we don't think we've had our say on this. Let's see what the people think. So it was, it came from a different perspective there.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, I think it sort of is in some ways in line with the Republicans generally misreading the demographic character of the country and doing everything they can to be a monolithically white party to push out voters of color and certainly on the national stage, losing significantly as a result.
Well, you know, if you look at, I think this vote was a big vote for the status quo. I mean, you look at the House and you have basically it's the same composition. Even all those quote unquote crazy Tea Party people who were elected 2 years ago were sent back to office. The Democrats, you know, kept the Senate and Barack Obama won the presidency again. So I don't know that it's a massive... rejection of traditional values or traditional Republican ideas.
Well, I think if you look at ballot initiatives generally, you see a general popular sentiment trending in a progressive direction. But I would certainly agree with you that overall, if you look at who won in the states, the makeup of state legislatures, who governors are, who controls Congress, and who the president is, things at this point today, a day after the election, look just about exactly like they do before the election, and the fights that we've been having for 2 or 4 years are going to keep happening. I think that's
Let me introduce. We're also joined here. Adam Jackson is called in. Adam Jackson is a CEO and co-founder of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, who joined me on the air last night as well. Adam, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Just saw your name pop up on the screen. Sorry to mean to leave you hanging there like that. And folks, we want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Let's look at this for a minute. I mean, there's some interesting things here about what we just talked about. And Adam, you can jump in at the head here. Someone used the word, there was a discussion between a Republican and Democrat last night on NPR that I was listening to at 1:30 this morning on my way home from the broadcast we were doing downtown. And someone said, the Republicans now probably never have a chance of winning national office again because they are monochromatic, that an aging monochromatic at that, and that there is a shift in America, and that's part of the issue the Republicans face. Let me let you sub, Marta. I mean,
I think that's a significant issue. I mean, the majority of growth in the country since the last census was taken is all from minorities. So that's and Barack Obama, you know, significantly won the minority vote. You know, it was just by massive numbers of Hispanics, Asians, African Americans. That's a fact. But at the same time, I don't know if it's and Mitt Romney, if you look at what he did, he went to the right of Rick Perry during the debates and tried to, basically say to alienate a lot of Hispanics in particular. So I think that was really bad. I think that the Republicans need to be to show that they are pro-immigration and come up with an actual reform there, because I think that Romney really fumbled that. But the bigger issue to me is finding a candidate with core values. And I think a lot of people just didn't want to come out and vote for Mitt Romney because, I think he got, 2 million votes less than
Obama.
Than Obama, but also than McCain.
Everybody got less votes from the last election.
Time, I don't think that it was really late in the game when he energized people and he was basically created Obamacare and then ran against it. There was all these things that that were working against him, and I think that people couldn't really get excited about him.
Adam, you want to join in, then we'll go back to Seth. Adam?
I'm sorry. Sorry, what did you say, Mark?
Yeah, I was just asking you to join in on the conversation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you that last moment. But in terms of, the Republican Party being too monochromatic, I think the larger issue here is, especially in Baltimore, you got folks who are dealing with, material issues of, suffering and oppression on a daily basis. And when you're looking at two candidates, people like Obama and Romney, it becomes pretty clear. It's people like Romney, who are super rich, are out of touch with the majority of American population. It's obvious to most people that he's not going to be, the best candidate for president. And I think the larger issue we need to attack here is, the national political discourse is caught up in the theater of, who's the more conservative, who's the more fiscally conservative, who's the more socially liberal. And the thing is, it's all theater. It's not material. It doesn't deal with people's lives on a daily basis. And I think from jump, that's kind of the issue that Mitt Romney had. He wasn't really talking to Americans who are really suffering on a daily basis. And I think Obama was able to get that emotional appeal out of folks that typically you don't really see out of politicians. And I think that's what happened in this election. They had a whole bunch of people who are really dealing with suffering on a daily basis. And Obama, someone who seems like, throughout his presidency, he's working towards, social solutions to our problems. That's the kind of president folks want. They don't want someone who's out of touch and rich dictating what's happening to them, like what happened with Bush over the course of 8 years.
So, go ahead. Were you going to say something, Seth, and we'll go back to Marty?
I don't know. I think that he raised a bunch of good points. I mean, one of the things that is that I think went wrong with the Republican Party in recent years is the fact that they've been preaching, free markets, but without any, philosophical underpinnings for that. It's like, why do you like free markets? What's the purpose of this? Why is it beneficial and why should we follow that? And I think there's been a huge disconnect between just, saying freedom on one side and then Republicans not really actually voting for freedom when they're in Congress. I mean, they have pushed up the debt like everyone else. And then I think people just looking out at this party and not seeing, why this is going to make life easier. Why is this going to help people in inner city Baltimore or Chicago or anywhere else, get out of poverty? And I think the Republicans really need to rethink how they, why they believe in free markets and explain it much better and create, just create a vision that they couldn't in this past election.
Yeah, I think, in part, I sort of agree with what you're saying. I think Republicans talk a lot about free markets and smaller government, but, they strangely decide not only do they not really fill that out, but they couple that with a seeming need to deride the people who are on the losing end of those very free market policies, you know, talking about the 47%
right.
and so forth. You know, but I'd also say that, you know, people who were polled in exit polls said that they still understand the economic problems that are happening in this country to be connected quite fundamentally to the economic policies that were pushed during the Bush administration.
I know, that was fascinating to me. That really was interesting to me, and I had a hard time believing that. But.
Well, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, because I think that, in fact, people's experience of the economy has not been one that suddenly emerged. It's one that's been, you know, for a lot of communities, the recession, which started 4 years ago, you know, for the country in general, for a lot of communities, for lots of communities of color, you know, that recession started much longer ago. Unemployment's been higher amongst lots of communities of color and low-income communities for a very long time. So I actually think there's a recognition that the kinds of economic policies that were being pushed for 8 years during the Bush administration have been bad for lots of folks for quite a long time. So I want to take a back to a point that
Go ahead.
You made before, which is that, you know, this idea that the Republican Party is sort of forever lost at this point, because they have focused so much on white voters, have completely ignored and neglected voters of color, young people, and so forth. No, I think that the truth is the Democratic Party could mess up, that they could get into office. I mean, there is a Democratic president here, you know, and in the next 4 years, if there isn't a fight for the issues that really do matter most to the Democratic base. So, you know, if there isn't a really concerted fight for immigration reform, a really concerted fight to pass another, a jobs bill, to implement more stimulus, to get people back to work. If these fights don't appear, it doesn't look like Obama and congressional Democrats are having these fights and fighting hard, I think that that the Democratic Party is, in fact, at risk of losing some of that support. If there isn't a really powerful Democratic immigration reform push, the Latino vote, I think they won't be able to take it for granted. And you know, the same is true about certain economic issues. So this is about policy much more than it is about just kind of diversity or something, the diversity of the Democratic Party, the natural diversity of the Democratic Party. This is about what the shape of policy is.
I mean, what you just raised, I think that part of the reason, and I'm going to go to the phones here in a minute, but I'll let you jump in here, Marta, as well, and Adam. Some people have argued that part of the reason Barack Obama didn't get the amount of votes he got last time, that why it was so close for him, was that he didn't fight for that agenda. Many people have argued the Tea Party may have raised its head, but might not have won Congress and might not be in positions now if Barack Obama had in fact said, okay, we're going to have a mortgage moratorium. We might bail out the banks, but they're going to have to answer for this. And if he'd stuck to some of that, it might have been, I think echoing what Seth was saying, it could be a very different situation. It may be very different in 4 years if that doesn't happen in the next 4 years. For Democrats.
Sure. And I mean, if you look on the Republican side, you know, there's been a fundamental shift in how things have been going since 2008, 2009, when the Tea Party started. You know, a lot of that has sort of simmered down. But I think it's going to have lasting repercussions over the next 20 to 30 years, because you have this, you know, when the Tea Party took off, basically, you know, they did form into more cohesive groups, and they've gotten a whole slew of new candidates into water boards and sewer boards, school boards. That's all the starting ground for politicians. So I think that has not changed. And I actually just spoke to a group up in Harford County a couple weeks ago, and they have a couple candidates that are on the school board up there. So I mean, that's just it. That takes time, and I think that will change the Republican Party. In Maryland, for example, you have at the local level, you have 158 Republicans, I think, and 157 Democrats. I mean, that'll never at this point in time be able to change the face of the congressional map, simply because of all the gerrymandering that's going on. But I just think it's. you know, those are some things to watch going forward for the Republican Party.
But and you can see it in the voter turnout. Every state except Iowa had a dip in turnout because Iowa and is a very different place.
Who knows? Never been there.
but everywhere. I mean, we had a lower turnout than before, and that in the last election, which is one of the reasons I think it was so close. And that could be a factor we can look at over the coming days and see how that affected this election. And then this election also, I mean, I think that when you look at the voter breakdown in America, which I was doing earlier today, who voted and who voted for what, it's really interesting. I mean, when you look at it in terms of age and gender, I think women came out in a major way, and we'll talk about that again next hour, and defeated two men who came out, several men in this election, who came out with really misogynist statements, and they just said, enough is enough. And they spearheaded those defeats.
No, those were not, those two guys, I mean, Murdoch and Akin, I think, the, you know, that was not an ideological defeat. That was a gaffe.
Idiotological defeat.
Right. So, I mean, that was that was very unfortunate.
But, I mean, go ahead.
You clearly can't, you cannot come out and talk about, lesson learned, you can't come out and talk about legitimate rate and win. I mean, that just, you just don't win anymore. But you know, I do think on those issues, the reproductive rights issues and so forth, I mean, it is absolutely the case that the politicians, the Tea Party, who have been, you know, pushing a slew of bills around the country in states to restrict reproductive rights, reproductive health access, to impose voter ID laws, I mean, those state-level politicians remain. And you know, when you look at the national picture here, state legislatures are just about as many are run by Republicans now as after the 2010 Republican surge on the heels of the Tea Party sort of movement. And so, you know, we are going to see and there's now 30 Republican governors as opposed to 29. You know, North Carolina's governor is now a Republican and joins a Republican legislature there who became Republican following 2010. So, you know, the whole infrastructure of conservative state-level politicians is still there. And, you know, the kinds of policies that ended up really fundamentally affecting the shape of people's lives in the day-to-day are still going to be pushed by those politicians. You know, the most immediate fight on that front is around healthcare and the implementation of the Medicaid expansion to a larger number of low-income people in the U.S. Republican legislatures and governors are going to get to decide whether to expand Medicaid, and you know, it's looking unlikely that it's going to happen in many states.
So before we go to break here, and Jay in Middle River, you're the first caller up. We're going to go to break and come right back to your call. Adam, do you have a thought to take us to break?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I want people to kind of talking about voter turnout and Barack Obama, I think people kind of got over the euphoria of him getting elected in 2008. And what it forced the entire country to do is take a hard look at, you know, the policies that we want, what are some of the things we want out of Obama and the presidency. And I think that, you know, kind of happened this election is that people are trying to take a hard look at the policies. And I think Obama's going to have a harder time this time around because now people are going to be scrutinizing him to a larger extent. And, you know, I think that's a good, it's a valuable discussion for us to have, especially when we're talking about the dichotomization and the polarization of Republicans and Democrats in national politics.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back to our guests and discussion about the election. And we'll look at everything from some new people who were elected in the Congress and Senate, what that might foretell. New Hampshire has an entire – all the political representatives who were elected yesterday were women, which was interesting. The first pansexual was elected to the U.S. Congress from South Texas. We have Tammy Duckworth won. There's a lot of that. We'll talk about that. Tammy Baldwin won. So that we'll talk about what that shift might mean in a larger social sense as well. 410-319-8888. Jay, you're the first caller up, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We are spending the next 2 hours today, well, now an hour and a half now, talking about the elections yesterday, statewide and national. We are joined here in this first hour by Marty Mossberg, senior fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute and fellow at the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity, and a columnist, but you can also read her in the Baltimore Sun and the Frederick News Post. Seth Wessler is an investigative reporter for ColorLines.com and has been writing a lot about the ballot measures across the country and what they say about all of us and where America's going. We're also joined by Adam Jackson, CEO and co-founder of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. And Jay, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Jay.
I'm wondering what is going to be the difference from the last 4 years, not in terms of leadership or acumen, but turning down the noise on, you know, the political blockades that are put up. I mean, it's one thing that everybody recognizes, you know, about all the filibuster attempts and everything that they've done to make him a one-term president. But what is going to turn down the noise on affecting the less than, or the 49% that still believe like he's doing a bad job and that messaging works? And I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, I mean, you have to look at the election results. I mean, the people elected Barack, re-elected Barack Obama, but they also pretty much returned the same people to the House, and the Senate is, you know, is still under the Democrats. So if you're asking for what's going to happen with the gridlock, well, the American people said they want that divided House and Senate.
Well, let's talk about that philosophically and also politically for a minute. I was thinking about this last night, I was trying to look at the states around the United States of America and who controls the gerrymandering of districts in every state, mm-hmm. like Martin O'Malley controls
exactly.
it here, right? So, but as you were saying, Seth, 30 of the governors are Republican, and I forget the exact number of legislatures that are also controlled by Republicans.
Yes, now 57. Right?
How many?
57 of the 98 partisan legislative chambers are now run by Democrats.
And so how many would that be by state, do you know?
Well, it you know, it's some states are mixed, and,
right.
But it's a majority of you know, of states' legislative chambers are Republican.
So knowing that America is a very divided place in terms of our where we think what this country should be and how we should define it, I wonder how much you think when we talk about this divided Congress that Jay just brought up, Seth. I wonder how much of that is also defined by how we choose our districts and who's in those districts and therefore who gets elected and why the House then is in Republican control. I'm not saying it would be in Democratic control necessarily. It might be, it might not be. But how much does that play into this divide you see on Capitol Hill?
I think it's a huge deal. I mean, just, you know, to back up, every 10 years when the census comes out, there's a redistricting process. And in most states, that redistricting process is controlled in one way or another, either directly by or indirectly by the party that controls the legislature, the governor's mansion. And so in a context of the post-2010 elections, redistricting happened with the controlled by Republican state politicians. That's not true everywhere. Some places courts do it. Some places, in some places, appointed commissions do it. But in many places, it was Republicans. And Republicans essentially were able to, in those places, to sort of lock in the gains. There was this wave of Republican victories in 2010, and they constructed a seawall to sort of hold in that wave. And so, you know, the Brennan Center, which is at New York University,
yeah.
right before the election, they released this report and on redistricting. And they projected that there were probably 11 congressional seats that would have gone to Democrats based on polling and other measures and demographic measures, but instead were going to stay in or fall to Republican candidates as mm-hmm. a result of that redistricting effort. And that redistricting effort, to be clear, you know, that's about drawing lines around neighborhoods and prying counties apart and coupling together cities so that districts, in this case, you know, when parties control it, you have the best chances of sending Republicans here into office. In two states, which I think this is really interesting, you know, in two states where Republicans were in control of state legislatures, that's Maine and Minnesota. They controlled both the House. House and the Senate in each of those states, Republican. In those two states, the legislatures actually don't control the redistricting process. It's either by a court, or I guess in Maine, the redistricting hasn't happened yet. So it's
right.
It's still, you know, the districts are still like they're the old pre-2010 districts. In those two states, Democrats swept control of those previously Republican-controlled House and Senate. So, you know, I mean, that's not to say that it, in everywhere where Republicans held on to the 2010 gains and held power, that it would have looked differently had redistricting been different. But I think it suggests that you know, that redistricting process, you know, we all know that it helps to lock in the incumbent party.
Well, definitely. I mean, we saw that in Maryland with John Delaney and his race against Roscoe Bartlett. I mean, he just totally creamed him. What was it, 59-38, I think? So that's huge.
Well, and to me, that's the same thing that we're talking about in terms of what happens in the Republican-held legislatures around the country. What it did to me is deny rural voters in western Maryland and across the northern tier of Maryland a voice.
Right. They don't have representation now.
They don't have representation because Roscoe Bartlett represented their point of view. I mean, as you look at the election results, the vast majority of rural voters in the United States of America vote Republican. And if you look at by a huge margin. And so that was his district. And that means those folks, no matter what your political position is, don't have a voice.
Well, and Roscoe was kind of a quirky character too. He wasn't the most conservative of Republicans either. He definitely believed in alternative energy sources. That was his main push. He was a scientist. He saw that as a you know, getting off of fossil fuels is a huge issue.
He did that.
His cabin in West Virginia is off the grid. He's an interesting guy.
He's a very interesting guy, and I happen to like Roscoe a lot. He's a very quirky, interesting guy. But Bob Somerville joins us in the studio as well. So let me go back to the phone so we can get some folks back in the conversation of 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Good evening, folks.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
All right. I guess I want to comment on the election results. Big surprise.
Well, it was a surprise, I think, for most people. Nobody really knew it was going to happen.
Well, I guess they weren't watching closely. Anyway, whether I was surprised or not, what's emerged is a coalition of young people, white men are excluded, just about every other group is contained in this, and their objective, they stand for peace and equality, and the right now their objective leader is President Obama, but their activity will continue, and we should watch this thing and realize that it includes ourselves.
Mike, you make an interesting point. It makes me think of let me read a quote here that last night that Bill O'Reilly made. This kind of made the headlines around. We didn't have a chance to get it on the air to hear his voice, but I'll read his quote because it fits in what you were saying. We'll talk about this for a minute. After the results came in, Bill O'Reilly at Fox News said, "It's not a traditional America anymore. There are 50% of the voting public who want stuff. They want things. Who's going to give them the things? President Obama. He knows it, and he ran on it. 20 years ago, President Obama would have been roundly defeated by an establishment candidate like Mitt Romney. The white establishment is now a minority, and the voters, many of them, feel the economic system is stacked against them, and they want stuff. You're going to see Hispanics vote for President Obama, overwhelmingly for President Obama, and women will probably break President Obama's way." I mean, I think that in some ways, he lays out what people are often afraid to talk about, which is this, that's part of our divide in America. When you look at the vote, the way it's broken down, the vast majority, almost 60% of the white white voters in America, white American voters, voted for Mitt Romney. Older citizens voted for Mitt Romney. Younger citizens, white citizens, voted for Barack Obama. And there is clearly a breach here. And Bob, you just walked in the studio. Let me let you jump in, and then we'll go all the way around the room.
Yeah, I tend to reject the breach language. In the exit polls I was looking at today, I don't know if these are final exit polls, Obama got 40% of the white vote. Now, you know, the white vote always goes to the Republican. Al Gore got 42%. Obama running in a very, very bad economy got 40%. I mean, that's, you know, it's not like – I think we should be careful about going with some of the language where we're becoming hopelessly racialized, polarized, that there's the two Americas are splitting up onto separate teams. There's still a lot of white voters who voted for Obama, which is good. And I hope Republicans start reaching out to minority communities if they ever get the word. I hope they start reaching out to minority communities and the whole nation gets mixed up a bit more within each party. But, you know, Obama's white vote went from 43% last time to 40%.
Or 39, I bet, in some polls.
These are exit polls. They're not exact counts. But that's just not very far below where Kerry got 41%, Gore got 42%. I mean, this is what Democrats get. And Obama got 40 in a very bad economic situation.
We also have a situation where the number of white voters has decreased as a percentage of the overall voting population as well. So that's changed the whole outlook.
I think it's a really good point. I mean, just to focus in on white men, I think Obama got 35% of white men's votes, the votes that we say, you know, all go to the Republican Party. It's just not true. And I think if we look at who voted in each party, that's actually more instructive than looking at the differences between the parties. So, you know, 88% of voters for Romney were white. The people who voted for Obama were fantastically multiracial, multi-age, mixed up, right? I mean, I think when we're talking about race and parties here, we're really talking mainly about the Republican Party going after, in quite intentional ways, as much of the white vote as they can, while the Democratic Party trying to put together what really is, I mean, sort of empirically, if you look at the numbers, a remarkably broad multiracial coalition.
Well, it was interesting. Last week I was in Houston and I ended up seeing Mikhail Gorbachev speak. And it was fascinating to me because his whole speech revolved around the fact that the free market system is broken and that it needs to be replaced with something that's more sustainable.
This is the Gorbachev speech that you heard in Houston the other day?
Yes. Uh-huh. And there was massive applause at all of those lines. You know, at one point he said that America needs its own perestroika. I mean, I was thinking, you know, this is a country that brutalizes its own citizens, so what are you talking about? But, you know, but he was gaining all this applause because I think he felt confident to say all these things in Houston, in a place that was built by oil money, because America has fundamentally changed, and he's seen it. You know, he said America is on the cusp of great change. And I think he knows that, because you look at, you know, you look at what's going on in this country. You have, you know, 47% of the population doesn't pay federal income taxes. You have 47 million people on food stamps. What Bill O'Reilly said.
People pay taxes.
They pay taxes.
Payroll taxes.
Yes. But, right. you have the people who want Santa Claus, and then you have the people who still believe in that old America, that traditional America that Romney was pushing. And that's just not the majority of people anymore.
Well, let me say this about the
Mike, please. Okay, well, one second. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me say this about the people who don't pay federal income tax. And I may have said this the last time I was here. When George Bush ran for president in 2000 and then in 2004, he ran on the platform of he wanted to get 6 million additional families off federal income tax. I mean, this was the Republican policy as recently as in campaign 2000. So, you know, that people are paying a lot of different kinds of taxes. Federal income tax is only one revenue stream out of many. And I don't think it's because people have been going around begging, please get me off federal income tax. This was the Republican campaign in the year 2000.
So let me open the phones here again. And
sure.
We have a note from Adam. We'll get Adam back in this conversation here. But let's go to Stacey in Dundalk. You're on the air.
Give him a call. I'm a minority and I'm a female and I'm also a Democrat, and I voted for President Obama, but I just felt that I did it primarily, one, because I felt like it was the choice between a lesser of two evils, and that I just somehow felt that he could relate better to my circumstances. Some people might say that I was middle class, also been a single parent, but I feel like I'm a very struggling, almost middle class person.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel that optimistic. I voted for him, yes, but I just don't feel that optimistic. And I just feel, I don't know, disappointed about some things. And
what are the things you feel disappointed about, Stacey?
Well, some of the laws that got passed that I didn't agree with. And I just feel like I'm still struggling. I'm still struggling financially. And I know we said, okay, we'll give you 4 more years. And, again, I don't really regret voting for him because, again, I feel like he can best relate to my circumstances. And I'm sick and tired of a lot of social programs being given an axe. And I think there's a greater need. These are more challenging times. And I think disability services need to be funded. A whole lot of programs for children and youth from Parks and Rec need to be funded. Just a lot of social programs. And I don't think that Mitt Romney would have really supported. I think there would have been much more bleeding.
So one quick question, Stacey, for you is just call in, and he would Adam Jackson respond to that and our other two guests as well. Bob just had to go out and move his car before they towed it outside the station, which we don't want to have happen. But Stacey, so I'm curious if this is a conversation you've had with a lot of your peers and friends. Do other people feel the same way you do? Just anecdotally?
I know a lot of people definitely feel the way that I do. I mean, I think, well, it's two parts.
I just want to add one little quick thing. Even though I'm a Democratic, staunch Democrat, and voted that, there has been a time when I did vote for a Republican. But that's saying that I'm not totally committed. And that was just because I didn't feel that Democrat candidate that was running at that time,
mm-hmm.
not for president, for another office, had the people's best interest. And I checked with my friends and my family and some of us who've been Democrat, and they were all female. They said, you know what, I didn't vote for that Democrat candidate either. So I can take your response off.
Thank you, Stacey. And I will admit, Adam, go ahead. I'll admit I've also at times voted Republican, even that might make some people fall to the floor. But Adam, go ahead.
what I was saying was I think that what she says is right on the money. I think that it's twofold. First, when we were talking about that discussion about race earlier, I think that, for example, Mitt Romney, he relied on a lot of racist subterfuge to inspire conservative whites to vote for him. And I think that, you know, you look at the numbers and you break down, you know, who's voting for Obama, who's voting for Romney, I think they're really deceptive, because I think the goals of the campaigns were not to figure out how to get all Americans united behind one of them. I think that, you know, if you're a political strategist, you got to use all that you have, to, you know, to get the numbers out. So I think for Mitt Romney, he was definitely using race as a way to get conservatives, middle class, and working class whites to vote for him. Now, in terms of supporting Barack Obama and feeling disappointed about it, I think that this is kind of what I was saying earlier, is that young people have kind of been disenchanted with Obama. I mean, I know I have particularly, because, you know, I think I'm pretty radical and I have, you know, a radical point of view. I think that, you know, 2008 I was really hopeful, you know, black president's about to get elected, at least something's about to be different. But looking at the larger scheme of things, you know, generally things have remained the same. And I think that, you know, if you look at the legislation that he's done, you can say that he's been, you know, progressive. But for the most part, he's been the president of the United States, except that he's black now. And I think that, you know, we have to look at that in the larger scheme of things, especially when we're talking about race, because to me, a lot of the subterfuge, a lot of the undergirding framework for why, you know, it's important that he get elected in the first place was because people didn't want another racist, rich, old white man to run their country into the ground like George Bush did. And I think that people were kind of sick of it, and that, you know, that's why they reelected Barack Obama. But I said this earlier on my Facebook and my Twitter today. I mean, Jesus didn't come back. Pigs are not flying. And America is just going to be as screwed up as it was yesterday, no matter if Barack Obama was elected or not.
Well, Marty, you're shaking your head, then we'll hear what Seth is saying. I can't see if Seth is shaking his head or not, but we'll start with you and go to Seth.
No, I just, the whole race issue, I think that if you're going to talk about race, you have to look at the fact that Barack Obama's campaign spent, what was it, $100 million early in the campaign to define Romney as this rich, out-of-touch white guy, and Romney never really rose out of that. That to me was the biggest demonization. And
well, I didn't see the white part. They did demonize him as a rich, out of touch guy. But where was? I think the white part.
Well, the white just went along with it.
But that wasn't part of the.
Mitt Romney did a lot of very effective work on his own to get himself to be seen as a rich, out of touch white guy. I mean, you know, that was something that his campaign, I don't think, needed a whole lot of help doing. But you know, I think the caller's point is really important. Like, you know, one of Romney's main talking points, his main stump speech around what's wrong with the Obama economy, is that people are on food stamps. I mean, let's be clear about this. The food stamp program is one that was able to respond to the recession because of things that Clinton and then Bush did to the program to make it more expensive and more accessible to people. You know, he lumped that together with a whole bunch of discredited things about Obama getting rid of the welfare work requirement. It absolutely wasn't true. Clearly, you know, you can't bring up welfare and have it not have racial undertones. You know, that was one of his strongest points on what's wrong with the Obama economy. I mean, I think that's going to alienate people, especially in a time when more Americans than ever are relying on this sort of program.
Well, no, I loved her. I think it was Stacey's point of just talking about how she's voted for different people in the past, and I think that goes back to the fact that the Republicans have not done a good job at all of connecting their economic philosophy with just a total philosophy of life. And I think she's feeling like she was left out in the cold. She said Obama was a lesser of two evils because she just didn't feel like she fit in with Romney. And I don't think someone's wealth should disconnect you from other people. I mean, you could have there's plenty of really wealthy white people like John Kerry, who I think most people didn't connect with. There's lots of different factors there.
David Troy wrote in on Facebook. He said, I did some quantitative analysis of my own and found the population density correlates to votes for Obama. Every state with more than 200 people per square mile went for Obama. States with below the average of 88 people per square mile went 66% for Romney. Something about cities and density makes people see the value of government, which is an interesting point.
Well, you just have to look at the map, the county map, to see that. It just will pop out of you immediately.
So
that's why I think Republicans are so, you know, you look at something in a local situation, are very angry at Plan Maryland, because what that is doing is trying to restrict growth in rural areas and push people into the cities. And they see that as an assault on their rights.
And this would be another Facebook comment we just had from Jay Brooks. Jay writes in, I'm so happy about everything. More women in Congress, including a Hindu and a Buddhist. That makes at least three Buddhists in Congress right now. Marriage wins in Maryland. And Maine and Washington and Minnesota said no to hate Obama. It was like Christmas and New Year's Eve. The country's evolving, and there's nothing Republicans can do to stop it. Last night, love won, WON. That is part of... I think what one of our earlier callers, Mike, was trying to say is the trend in America, and it even feeds what you were saying about the Gorbachev thing you heard, is going that way. People are seeing there's a very, you know, when you hear people say this is not our America anymore, many people interpret this means this is not our white America anymore. It means it's not our conservative America anymore. Things are shifting. I think this election, in that sense, was very much about what both parties seem to embody. More than their policies, what it embodied emotionally for people, and that's what you saw happening here.
Oh, definitely. If you read some of the comments from Romney supporters after he gave his concession speech, you know, there's many of them sort of sounded like, I'm so surprised. I must not have read the state of America right now. I really don't get it. And people are just very confused. They didn't understand why he didn't win. Because they just thought that they were still living in this America that was Ronald Reagan's Morning in America, America that was one of traditional values and of, you know, people who were pushing individual achievement and those types of what most people consider traditional American values. We have a very different society today. I mean, even just looking at the, you know, the gay marriage vote in Maryland and those going on across the country, this is the first time it's ever been passed by a vote of the people. I mean, that's historic.
It is historic.
It's different in some ways, but I wish Bill O'Reilly and others would stop putting in people's heads the idea that something has just massively changed and they don't live on the same planet anymore. That's just not true. It's a panic. It's a silly reaction by O'Reilly.
I don't think it's a panic. I think he's just looking at what's happened over. This is a slow going beast. This has been going on for decades.
What's the beast?
This shift in American values.
What shift? I mean, I'm serious. What is the shift?
I mean, many people voted to support marriage equality because they have a value around families and marriage. I actually think, you know, the shift is one that gets used to drum up the sense that everything that was good, this imagined thing that used to be wonderful, is going to disappear. I actually think that ideologically, the shift is not so great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, that whole takers thing, I mean, we had Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid when Ronald Reagan was declaring mourning in America, and I don't mean that as a criticism of him, but we had all that, and we have prescription drugs because Bush proposed it and passed it just 7 or 9, 10 years ago. So, I mean, we aren't living in a new universe, but there is this reaction, and it sells well on in certain media outlets to put this into people's heads that the whole world has changed. The whole world hasn't changed. I mean, some things are changing, but we are not on a new planet. I don't think it's good to tell people that.
No, I don't think that he was saying, again, I don't think he was saying that we're on a new planet, and I'm not saying we're on a new planet. I just think that over the past 20 years, you know, the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, you know, communism fell in 89, and to have all of this, to have Gorbachev come to the United States and totally, you know, rip on the free market system and have Americans clap, that just doesn't happen overnight. That took a long time, and that got that happened as a result of a cultural shift in what Americans value, and it's bigger government now.
And it happened after a long period, I think, of many Americans, especially younger Americans, realizing that that the system of economic sort of free marketism that that many folks grew up in and came to age and isn't doing them much good.
But we don't have free market capitalism. We live in a crony capitalist society.
Sure.
So I don't even like using that, using capitalism as a term.
We actually have to take a break because we're running out of time in this segment. I want to thank Seth Wester. It's been great to have you on the show. It's always good to have folks from Color Lines on.
I hope you'll all come to Facing Race in your city there next week.
We will announce it, and we will be there with bells on.
Sounds great.
See you there. We're going to take a very brief break and come back. Marty, always good to have you in the studio here with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Bob is hanging around, too, and we're going to come right back to continue our conversation about the elections. So don't go away.